This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the BristolCon Fringe reading series. So, our final reader for tonight is joining us all the way from Iceland, via London, originally from Iceland, which I'm absolutely delighted about, and getting a fine collection of European writers coming to speak to us in Bristol. And he has a wonderful novel out from Joe Fletcher Books called Swords of Good Men. I think we'll hear a little bit from that, and also a world premiere from the sequel. So can I have a warm welcome, please, for Snorri Christensen.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
As mentioned, I'm from Iceland, and by my count, we've now had a gentleman with a marvellous moustache doing steampunk with all kinds of long words. We've had poetry so sophisticated that it did Fibonacci backwards. We've had Jane Austen and aliens done in classy British. I've never felt less British and more crude in my life. This is my book. It's called Swords of Good Men. It's mostly Vikings, beards and swearing.
Much like myself, and
I'm going to read to you from the prologue of this, first of all. This is available in all good and some bad bookstores. And if you find someone that's carrying it, smack him around the head. It's in the spirit of the book. I'm going to read to you from the prologue, where there are two young men, Ulvar and Geiri, who are at the tail end of a trade mission. And we find out later in the book why they've been booted out of their house and home and sent on this trade mission. They are landing at night in a town in pretty much the arse end of nowhere. It's a raider's town on the west coast of Norway, and it's sort of an outpost full of men that don't blink too much and sharpen their swords on their beards. So this happens when they've sort of landed, they've met the resident sort of bucktooth dockhand, and they've dumped their luggage, as it were, and they've gone in search of wine and women, as you do when you're young and you come to a new place. Steam drifted lazily up to the smoke-stained rafters from the pots at the far end of the hall. Sturdy tables lined the timber walls, and the smell of roasted meat lingered in the air. The longhouse was about half full. Without thinking, Ulvar scanned, counted, and evaluated. A handful of boisterous groups, jostling and laughing. About half of the others were tired-looking workers, quietly resting. The evening seemed to be winding down and turning into night. Ulvar spotted a table where a slim young man with thinning hair and sloping shoulders sat nursing a mug. He saw him looking and shrugged by way of permission. "I have found us a table," Ulvar said. "I'll go get the ale," Geirte said. "Wait and watch, cousin," Ulvar said as he took a seat. "Wait and watch. One of these days I may be able to teach you to observe." He gestured for Geirte to sit and nodded towards a big pillar on the wall halfway down the hall, where a big dishevelled man sat alone at the table muttering to himself. Everything about him spoke of poor manners and worse grooming. Thinning, limp, dirty blonde hair crept forward over a creased forehead, ending just above beady eyes and a mouth stuck in a permanent sneer of displeasure. "You bastards!" the big man suddenly shouted, his pockmarked face beetroot red. He squinted at the others inside the hall and banged on the table for emphasis. Snarling, he raised a battered wooden mug to his lips. "You think you're so much better than us just because you live in a stupid town? Think you're..." The rest of his words drowned in ale. He sputtered, swallowed and coughed. "And you charge too much for this piss!" "Shut up, pig lover!" someone shouted. "Who said that?" the farmer shouted back, furious. "Who said that?" He rose and staggered out onto the middle of the floor, his big frame swaying. "Come on then! I'll have every last one of you!" he shouted, brandishing his mug. "What are you going to do? Grab us by the tail?" someone shouted from another table. Pig snorts bounced off the walls, followed by raucous laughter. Ulvar and Geirte watched as the farmer spun around, trying in vain to find the source of the insults. Groups of workers sat on benches up against the walls, eating, drinking, and talking. No one seemed to pay him any special mind, but his blood was up. He staggered over to a man sitting alone at a table in the corner by the door.
"You!" he shouted. "You're in my seat."
Ulvar nudged Geri and pointed discreetly at the groups behind the pig farmer. Some of the men had stopped talking and were watching the exchange in the corner intently, but the fat pig farmer didn't seem to notice. The man in the corner ignored him.
I said you're in my seat. Move.
The farmer's voice was strained, but the man at the table still ignored him, as if willing the big drunkard to disappear.
Move now, dogfish, or I'll break your head.
One by one, the tables in the longhouse grew quiet. The sitting man sighed, reached for his mug of ale, drained it, and rose.
Oh,
Geri whispered. A deadly silence filled the longhouse. There was a tangible sense of mass about the man in the corner, a shock of unruly blonde hair, big shoulders, long arms, calloused hands with thick fingers. The man was short but built like a bear. He put his mug down carefully and looked the pig farmer straight in the eye. Two steps took him to within fighting range. He stopped for a heartbeat. Then the stocky man moved past the pig farmer and walked towards the door without saying a word. No one in the old longhouse spoke. The farmer looked at the lone man's back and seemed to struggle with the impulse to shout something, but thought better of it and sat down in the corner as the blond man left the longhouse. Ulvar grinned. See, Geri? I am fortune's gift to you. If it weren't for me, you'd have been pig fodder. Looks to me like the pig farmer had all the luck tonight, Geri replied.
Then this next one is from my 21st century runestone. This is from the second novel about the Vikings. It's called Blood Will Follow, and it's out on, well, theoretically, if the gods of publishing shine upon us, it's out on June the 5th from Joe Fletcher Books. And we touched down, well, the prologue was a little bit sort of givey away and spoilery, and the first chapter is slightly. And the second one is a little bit too revealing. So this is from chapter 3. We touched down here after having left Ulvar in some very difficult circumstances in book one. In book two, he's kind of a little bit lost, and he's running away from everything and everyone, and this is where we find him. Chapter 3. The air in the barn stank of moulding hay and horse sweat. Ulvar's stomach turned. His skin felt clammy, cold and hot, and he could feel the sheen of dirty sweat on his forehead between greasy strands of long black hair. She was writhing under him, trying to make a good show of it, whoever she was. Come on, she whispered. Come on, stranger, come on. There was an odd sort of desperation in her urging, he thought. She groped for him with little luck. He tried to focus on her face, sparkling blue eyes, blonde hair, tiny upturned nose, freckles. She was pretty in a country sort of way. He reached for her name, but got lost in a fog of mead. Nothing was right. All he could feel were his breeches rubbing against the underside of his deflating cock. He rolled off her. The straw scratched at him. She didn't even say anything, just made a sound in her throat, a mixture of disappointment and disgust. He felt her buck her hips next to him as she struggled to adjust her clothes. Fucking wimp, she spat as she rose and stormed off. Ulvar didn't care, wouldn't have cared even if he was considerably less drunk. Still, if he hadn't been so busy drinking away his game winnings, he wouldn't have squared her, or tried to at any rate. He snorted, rolled his eyes, and mumbled something that might have been a joke as he tugged up his breeches and pulled himself up to a position that was almost standing. When he stumbled out, the cold air outside the stables hit him like a slap in the face. All the smells of the autumn night were amplified. The manure, the sour smell of horse piss and wet hay, the rotting leaves in the forest just past the fence. His stomach lurched and he felt the bile rising. He leaned against the wall and fought it back down with great effort. There was no denying it any longer. I fucking stink, he slurred. Fucking stink. Needs to find clean clothes or something. I'm a bath. He grinned, straightened up, and looked sternly at the tethering post. Where's my bath? He commanded. You there. You're short, but you'll have to do. Fetch me my bath, and a wench to put it in and put in it. Ah! Hey! Limp dick! Someone rounded the corner and headed towards him. Short, not too skinny, farmer's build, farmer's clothes, fighter's walk. Behind him came the blonde girl he'd just been with. Anne something. And I'm Ulvar, Ulvar shouted back. Nice to meet you, he giggled. What can I do for you, King Limpdick, and your fetching wife, Queen Limpdick? He bowed unsteadily. That's him, Torolf. He tried to rape me, the girl said. Ulvar laughed. More like the other way around, sweetness, he said. Your wife, sister, both? Tried her best to get me going, only she wasn't very good. If you wait till morning, I might be able to teach her a couple of tricks. Won't charge you much either. With great effort, he pushed off from the wall and balanced on his feet. He's lying! Hit him, Torolf! Punch him in the face! The girl's voice was shrill with fury. Torolf was now close enough for Ulvar to get a good look. The man turned out to be a boy, and the boy was younger than Ulvar had been expecting. Younger than him, even. Maybe 14, but country strong. There was murder in his eyes, and somewhere in the back of Ulvar's mind, a little bit of common sense appeared. Listen, Torolf, this is a mistake. This is a misunderstanding. I didn't mean to say those things. Nothing happened. We could... The first blow landed on his shoulder. Torolf did not want to talk. Stop! The second punch hit a lot harder, just below the rib cage. Ulvar lost the fight against the contents of his stomach and vomited all over his attacker, who squealed very unheroically. His lady unleashed a string of expletives at Ulvar. You should watch that language, Ulvar slurred, lines of drool and bile dripping from his mouth. You could shrivel a man's cock with that mouth. Oh, wait, you already did. The girl shrieked, pushed Torolf out of her way, and picked up a stone to throw at him. The fury in her eyes awoke Ulvar's survival instinct, and he stumbled away. She did not let up until she chased him out into the woods, and the last missile had whizzed past his head, thwacking into a tree. Ulvar collapsed in a huffing, sweaty, drunken heap. His limbs felt soft and squishy. His head was starting to pound. Fucking bitch, he muttered. Fucking bitch, fuck it all. He hocked, spat, and lay down on his back. The ground was cold, wet, and solid. Above him, stars dusted the night sky. The night air was sobering him up some, and though the thumping in his head, he could hear running water somewhere. He vaguely remembered crossing a stream earlier in the day, just before he walked into town. If you could call it that. Longhouse, a few huts, farmers nearby, 50 people at a push. He'd heard some mutterings about King Olaf taking some of the best farmhands, but thought it prudent not to ask questions. They didn't care much for their new king. That was good enough. They'd had ale, they'd had a worn old board of taffel, and so he'd quickly found himself hustling for coin. Now he wished he hadn't spent it all on drink in the hope that it would help. It hadn't helped. However much he drank, she never went away. It hadn't helped to crawl on top of that village girl either. And somewhere inside he'd known it wouldn't. Now he just felt dirty. It seemed like no matter what he did, his mind still went to Lilia every night. Little flashes of her burned into his eyes. Her crown of red hair made of fire and sunlight. The necklace of blood that dragged her down to the ground like a stone in the ocean. He knew she would still come back to him tonight before he slept. So I might as well enjoy life until then, he muttered. Grabbing hold of a low-hanging willow branch, he levered himself up and went in search for more mead.
That's from book two. I'm putting a brave face on it, but I am defecating building material here. This is, especially after the gentleman before me, one of my fledgling attempts at a short story, which I'm going to lob at some people who have an anthology somewhere in America. They asked for villains, and the first thing I wrote for them was a very fetching and erudite piece on Richard III, and they said, "What's all this Richard III thing? You know something about Vikings?" And and who can blame them, really? So this is a piece called Carle's Hunt. Carle is mentioned once in Swords of Good Men as being the queen's cousin who Ulvar gets in a fight with shortly before he is sent very quickly on a trade mission very, very far away. Because apparently if you break the queen's cousin's arm, your life expectancy decreases somewhat. So this is Carlos Hunt.
The stag crashed through the cover of the trees and stumbled into the clearing. A puff of powdered snow drifted silently down from the shaking branches of a large pine and settled in its tracks. Snapping branches shattered the crisp, cold stillness of the forest as the wide-eyed animal plowed through frozen bushes, snorting and heaving. A broken arrow stuck out from caked grey fur on its hind leg, and droplets of blood stained the pristine snow around its feet. Limping, the big animal struggled to make its way across the frostbound clearing. When it was nearly halfway across, something hissed through the air and slammed into the wounded leg, less than an inch away from the broken shaft. The stag bleated in pain and struggled harder to get away from its invisible foe, but every step drove it deeper into the new fallen snow in the clearing, which rose almost to its belly. Snorting with the effort, the stag still managed to push its way towards the tree line on the other side. Another hissing whistle. The stag's head jerked and dropped as it crashed to the ground in a cloud of snow. This time there was no blood. Lowing in pain, the dazed stag lay on the white carpeted forest floor, majestic horns half buried. It did not see the hunter step into the clearing. He was blonde, tall and slim, clad in white sealskin and sable from head to toe, with a bow almost as tall as himself slung across his shoulder. Closing the gap with powerful strides, he crouched by the fallen animal, picked up the blunt training arrow that had taken the stag in the temple, and smiled. The big knife sighed as it left the sheath. The hunter gripped a horn, held the stag's head, and drew the knife almost tenderly across its throat. Blood pumped out of a small, thin wound. The animal convulsed and sagged in his arms. The hunter frowned and stabbed the knife into the cut, twisting violently. The stag jerked and bleated, kicking out and struggling for its life. The hunter smiled, held onto the horn, and twisted the knife harder. As the kicks lost power, he gradually widened the wound, blood staining the snow in an expanding circle. Mumbling soft, soothing words, he drained the life out of the fallen stag.
Prince Carlo!
The shout rang out of the forest behind the hunter and the deer.
Prince Carlo, where are you?
A rake-thin man stumbled awkwardly into the clearing, an attendant in his wake.
There! Oh, there! Are you well, Prince?
The hunter sighed and rolled his eyes. Moving swiftly, he jabbed the point of the big hunting knife into the stag's neck and ripped outwards, severing the artery in the windpipe. Then he let go of the head, stood, and turned.
Over here,
he shouted.
Well met, Breki.
He watched the man stumble across the clearing, wading through the snow. The long blue cloak that was supposed to be majestic and sweeping kept getting caught in half-buried bushes and low-hanging branches. The attendant struggled to keep him untangled, but it didn't seem like the man could put a single step right. The faint sounds of baying hounds and hunting horns drifted in behind them. As soon as he was close enough, Breki offered the prince a royal salute.
The honor is all mine, Prince Carlo. What a magnificent beast you've taken.
Thank you, Carlo said, smiling. He was a noble opponent. Fast, too. I caught a glimpse of him and had to give chase.
You just disappeared all of a sudden. The huntmaster was out of his wits. He thought he'd lost you and the king would have had his head. That'll be him and the hounds, Breki said.
He pushed the younger man who had caught up with him.
Gafti, what have you learned?
The sandy-haired youth blushed furiously. Does his lordship require anything? His eyes went to the bloodied blade of Prince Carlo's hunting knife sparkling in the winter sun.
No, thank you, Galti, Prince Carlo replied. I will wipe the blade myself, but you can go fetch me a handful of branches, thick as your thumb.
The young boy scurried off as Carlo crouched down to the kill. Breki drew his own hunting knife and set to work alongside the prince.
You are far too kind to the boy, Carlo, he said. He's lucky to be here with us.
Far too kind, you say?
Maybe,
Carlo said thoughtfully as he sliced a small hole in the deer's belly.
Maybe a prince should just tell people to do as he wishes.
Exactly, said Breki. People expect you to.
I expect the prince to be princely, Carlo mused.
Yes,
Breki replied. Their knives worked in tandem, slicing open the belly of the stag and drawing out its entrails.
Tell me then, Breki, what is a prince?
Carlo asked quietly. Breki flushed.
A prince? A prince?
Yes.
A prince is the son of the king and queen, Breki muttered. And am I the son of Jolavar, our noble king, who is 3 years my junior?
Carly's knife moved faster, tearing through skin and flesh.
No, but am I the son of Eric the Victorious and Sir Gidde the Haughty, therefore brother to Jolavar? No, careful with the stomach lining.
Then what am I, Breki? You are Prince Carly. I am the king's noble servant, relying upon the goodwill of Carl's thralls and fishwives alike. No one will ever follow me out of duty, Carly snapped. Kings are followed. The king's mother's younger cousins are tolerated.
Now, Prince, there's no...
You know well enough that I am a prince in name only. I have to make my own fortunes, and that's why I'm kind to Galti. You can lead all you like, but it doesn't count for shit if nobody wants to follow you. The gods know this. You can't go to Valhalla unless you give your life in battle. They won't have you unless you want to go to them. Working quickly, they gutted the deer and threw the steaming innards away. As they finished, the boy returned. Prince Carla turned to him. Would you follow me, Galti? Confused, Galti passed an armful of thick branches to the prince. Then he nodded. Yes, I would. Your Majesty, I mean... Satisfied, the prince turned back to Breki. See? I aim to be a prince of the people.
And everybody loves you, Prince Carly, Breki added quickly. You're well loved through the land of the Sphere.
That's good, said Prince Carly as he methodically broke down sticks to prop open the carcass. That's good to hear.
The peace and quiet of the clearing was broken for a second time as three exuberant hounds burst from the cover of the forest. They bounded across the open ground towards Carly and his prey, baying loudly and kicking up a small snowstorm in their wake.
Looks like the old man has had some exercise,
Breki said.
Indeed. I would expect him to be here any moment now, so I wonder, Breki, when King Jolliver told you to follow me, did he promise you a prize? Did he maybe say you should stick me if you got the chance?
The king did no such thing. He only said I should listen and report...
Breki's brain caught up with his mouth. He looked at the gutted deer and the broad, thick hunting knife in Prince Carla's hand. The prince calmly reached for the cooling innards of the stag and tossed them into the clearing. The hounds reversed in mid-bounds to chase their prey. Behind the men and the stag, their barks turned to growls.
A prince of the people, Carla said as he reached for the stag's skull, needs loyalty.
I'm loyal, Breki spoke. I am!
Carly's hand closed on an antler, his foot on the neck of the beast. He looked Galti straight in the eye.
Repeat after me, boy. It was an accident. I saw it. Breki blanched.
Your Highness, I didn't. I wouldn't have...
He pulled on his boot, but his foot was stuck in the snow. The prince pushed down hard, and the bone broke with a snap. Moments later, Breki's eyes flew open as the stag's horn punched through his throat with force. He coughed, clutched, and clawed at the wound and tried to tear the pain away, but it was too late. When he sank to his knees, he was already choking on his own blood. Prince Carly looked at Galti and raised an eyebrow.
It was an accident. I saw it, said the boy.
The prince smiled. As he reached for his hunting horn, he looked the boy up and down.
I think you will do well, Galti, he said,
and I need an attendant. Then he blew three long, mournful notes for emergency, help needed.
Thank you. It wouldn't be a proper reading without a bit of death and destruction, would it? Okay. So, those are our three readers for tonight. We'll have another swift break, and then we'll ask them a few questions.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.